Well, hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, June 10th, 2007, and this is show number 100. Happy birthday to us! That's a full century of shows, not 99, not 101, but 100 shows. Lil said that on his next twit, it will be show number 100 for him, but I think I'm actually posting just a smidge ahead of him. I think a whole lot of us started within just weeks of each other. Dig hit just 100 shows just a few weeks ago. And my good friend Tim Verporten hit 100 about 4 weeks ago. I'm thinking I'm in pretty good company. What do you think? Well, there was some debate in the family this week about whether I should play birthday music on the 100th episode, because it was sort of like 2 years was a birthday, but hey, it's my show. I'll play what I want. Well, thanks so much to all of you, those of you who sent in your congratulations. I really appreciate the feedback. Slough and Michael both sent along great well wishes, and Debbie wrote a fabulous comment on the website. Thanks to all of you. It means so much to me when I get all this marvelous feedback. Well, I guess it's time to stop patting myself on the head about all this and buckle down and do some work, eh? On show number 98, I reviewed My Potter from PodcastReady.com, which is a freeware podcatching client that runs under Windows, OS X, Linux, and more. I had tested My Potter under Windows and OS X, so the following week I tested it under Ubuntu Linux, running on my Mac as a virtual machine using Parallels. There's one trick to running it, but after that it ran flawlessly. If you're a Linux geek anyway, you would probably know how to do this, but it was a surprise to me what I had to do. The folder that gets installed includes a file that's a shell script called start_linux.sh. I was just knowledgeable enough to figure out that I had to open that in a terminal, so I typed in ./ and the shell script name. But then it said something about permissions. So I opened the README file. I know, can you believe that? Go figure. And sure enough, it said, you will require execute permissions to run this script. Okay, fine. I'll do that super user do thing by typing sudo space slash ./ start_linux.sh. But again, it said the same thing. Okay, fine. Super user isn't good enough. I'll actually switch to root. And again with the permissions error. Then I started thinking maybe what it was saying was that the application itself had to have permission to execute, not me having permissions. So I tried to remember there's that change mod thing that changes permissions to, like, you know, group and user and everybody and all that kind of stuff. And I knew it had a bunch of sevens near it. And then I just IM Bart and asked him what to type. Well, he told me that I had to type in the command chmod plus x *.sh. And of course it opened without a hitch. Why didn't I think of that? Well, I'm telling you all of this for two reasons. One is to let you that My Potter does indeed run on the Mac, Windows, and Linux, and it gives you the same easy interface to the same information. The second thing I wanted to make sure you were clear on was that Linux is not ready for the casual user. Even a nice easy distribution like Ubuntu is still a little weird for me. Maybe if you never wanted to install any software at all, it would be okay. But man, it's like pulling teeth to get something installed in this thing. If you're already a Linux geek, you might want to check out My Potter from PodcastReady.com. Well, last week I also talked about using Picasa Web Album to show off photographs, and I included a nice embedded link, photo sort of thing, they gave me to put in the blog that takes you right to the album from the D5 conference. Well, after I put the show to bed last week, I found another really cool thing. They give you an embedded slideshow, too. I threw it in the show notes, so if you already saw all the photos from the conference, they won't be that interesting, but the way the slideshow works might be interesting. They give you a choice of several sizes for the slideshow, from 144 pixels all the way up to 800 pixels. They also give you the option to show the comments, which is kind of nice. Even if you don't have the comments on the photos defaulted on, the viewer gets a little button that the people watching can use, and they can push it to show your comments. I chose to keep the comments defaulted off because they're a bit obtrusive, but check it out in the show notes and you can play with the button yourself. It's pretty cool. Another reason to check out Picasa Web Album at picasaweb.google.com. Well, I'm going to give you a two-part episode here that I recorded first for Tim Verporten. And over on that show, they're going to get it in two pieces, but you're going to get both pieces here together. So check that out right now. Hi, Tim. Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast here, hosted at podfeet.com. Last week, I did a review of Neo Office for you, the open source equivalent of Microsoft Office. In that review, I described one problem I was having where the line spacing kept getting all squished up. I posted the problem on the forums at trinity.neooffice.org, and many helpful people provided suggestions, the best one of which was to check my slide master. And of course, that's what was messed up. It was set to something less than single spacing, so the slides were just obeying orders. I don't know how I messed the slide master up, but I don't think NeoOffice was to blame. It was operator trouble. So I wanted to make sure I cleared that up before we got started. Well, let's get on to this week's segment. A few weeks ago, I had a hard disk failure, but luckily, I had a good backup from only 4 days before the crash, thanks to SuperDuper. I took the opportunity to start my installation of OS X from scratch, since I had been dragging my installation forward repeatedly from each OS X upgrade and from machine to machine. So I figured there was a lot of crud sitting around in the corners of my operating system that I didn't really need. It was sort of like I'd moved houses 8 times but never threw anything away before each move. This gave me the opportunity to find out how many applications I really use. Since I love freeware and shareware, and probably load about 3 to 5 a week, I figured my plethora of applications could be pruned down quite a bit if I started at zero and only added in what I need. I am surprised to say that I use a lot of applications after all. You're always asking people you interview, what's in your dock? So I thought it might be interesting to the audience to learn what applications are critical to me and were added within the first few weeks after the crash. I should point out that I keep very little in my dock itself because I launch virtually everything through Quicksilver. I want to tell you that as of today, I have 85 applications, 38 of which I added myself. A lot of stuff comes along with OS X, like Mail and iCal, the iLife Suite, and a bunch of other stuff. I'm not going to bore you with the explanation of all 38, but there are a few that I wouldn't have realized were so important to me until they were gone. Instant Shot from digitalwaters.net is what I use for screen captures, which I do all the time. I don't use it just for putting screenshots in my show notes, but I also put them in emails to explain things to people, or I transfer them in chat trying to show somebody what I'm talking about. Instant Shot has one great feature I can't live without, and that's that you can set it to automatically resize your screenshots to a specific maximum size. For instance, no larger than 500 pixels wide is what I like for the show notes. So this is a great time saver for me. Using other methods, I used to take the screenshot, then open it up in Photoshop, shrink it to 500 pixels, sharpen it, the whole thing. But Instant Shot does an excellent job of compressing the files and sharpening it back up. I don't see any JPEG artifacts at all, which is better than a lot of graphics programs I tried to speed it up before. Another great application is Milky Way from www.lny.mine.nu. It's another piece of freeware I just can't live without. This has turned out to be my favorite in a long list of applications I've tried that allows me to quickly see a preview of my photos. With Milky Way turned on, I click on a photo in the Finder, and it pops up a picture instantly. You can change the size of the preview that pops up and make it pretty big. There's a bunch of other cool effects I won't go through, and sometimes it is annoying to have these previews keep popping up, like you just click on a file and all of a sudden there's a picture and you didn't mean to do that. But since it's a menu bar application, you can just pull down to disable it when it gets on your nerves. I love having it. It's so nice to be able to go, is that the right picture? Click, you know, kind of nice. AppDelete is one of the two applications I actually do keep in my dock. It's from reggie.ashworth.googlepages.com/appdelete. I know it's been reviewed on the Mac ReviewCast several times, but I wanted to mention it anyway because it's indispensable for quickly deleting applications by dragging them onto the icon, which is why it gets one of the coveted spots in my dock. TextSpander, which is now known as TextExpander, is another application I can't live without. TextExpander is shareware, but I got TextSpander when it was freeware. I'm actually toying with the idea of upgrading to the shareware version, not because I don't have the capabilities I need, just to pay him some money because it's so helpful to me. TextSpander is a tool that allows you to create keystrokes that expand into full pieces of text. For example, I've trained it to insert my Mail-To address with only two characters hit. I have it set for the path to my website for uploads of files, because when I'm doing links, I have to do that all the time. And each week when I'm talking about a new tool that may be clumsy to type, I teach it to TextSpander so I don't have to keep typing it each time. This is a great time saver, and you'll be surprised how much you use it once you get addicted to it. I also did a big series on recipe applications. Trust me, I am no chef, but I found that Yum from NickSands.com was my favorite. So I brought it along to the new disk, especially since I had a few recipes already preloaded into it. I also found that my stash of tools I use to move my legally owned audio and video content around made my list. Mac the Ripper from MacTheRipper.org removes the copy protection so that I can use it to my own content. I like iSquint from iSquint.org and Handbrake from Handbrake.m0k.org. They're indispensable for converting from DVD format over to MPEG and other formats. So, for example, I can put video files on my iPod and lots of other formats. My other new tool that helps me pull audio loose from DVDs is MPEG StreamClip from Squared5.com. It works on both Mac and Windows, and it demuxes your audio and video so you can work with them separately and convert into a tons of useful formats. I do want to make sure you understand I'm talking about foreign stuff that I own and I want to move around as I see fit on my own equipment. I don't endorse piracy in any way, but I think I ought to be able to watch a movie on my iPod, for example, if I want to. Well, I'm going to leave this list here and pick up again next week or perhaps the week after, because I have a bunch more applications that I can't live without. So tune in next time for the second installment of Allison's Favorite Applications. Okay, they had to wait 2 weeks for the second installment, but because you're special No Silicast listeners, you get part two right away. Hi, Tim. Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast here, hosted at podfeet.com. Well, a couple of weeks ago, I gave you my tale of woe about losing my hard drive, but I turned it into a tale of discovery as I realized what applications are the ones I really rely on and aren't just a flash in the pan that I played with and thought was cool the first week. I figured I'd leave your listeners on the edge of their chairs by making it a cliffhanger last week and only giving out half of the applications. Well, the wait is over. Here's the second half of Allison's Favorite Applications. The next bunch of applications are kind of mainstream in that you hear a lot of people talking about them. Adium from AdiumX.com is my chat client of choice. It's the one client I've found that manages to keep AIM up and running when I'm at work behind our firewall. All the other ones seem to dump AIM, and I don't really know why. I like how much I can tailor the interface, too, setting transparency and how the windowing works, that kind of thing. You know, noises, all that stuff's a lot of fun. I was surprised to find that I decided to reload Audacity, the open-source audio recording and editing software, from audacity.sourceforge.net. Nothing against Audacity, but I had switched from Audacity to GarageBand a while ago for recording my podcasts. But it turns out there's just sometimes when Audacity is the right tool for the job. So it's back on my reclaimed system. Oh, I forgot to mention, Firefox was probably one of the first things I put back on my system, as it's my current favorite browser. But I did hear you talking about Camino the other day, and people are talking about Flock, so I'll probably go get those too. Quicksilver from quicksilver.blacktree.com is a must. I know you've all heard endlessly about it, but I simply won't work on a machine that does not have it on it. Can't stand it. Before long, I realized I hadn't loaded Skype up yet, which, while not my primary communication method, it's sure good to have around when you just need to talk in person. I'm addicted to screenshot utilities, as you might have caught on. And depending on the situation, I vacillate between Instant Shot, that I told you about last time, and Snap Z Pro from AmbrosiaSW.com. Snapseed Pro doesn't just do screenshots, but will actually record video as well, which is why I shelled out the $69 for it. It's a great program, really like it for what it does. If you're hoping to do any kind of video tutorials, Snapseed Pro is what you need. I should have mentioned right away that a top utility I had to load was SuperDuper from shirt-pocket.com. SuperDuper is the fantastic backup program that was responsible for saving all of my data when I had the hard disk crash in the first place. If it weren't for the incredible ease of use of SuperDuper, I would have never had up-to-date backups that were ready to reload right after the crash. I sent the developers over at ShirtPocket a nice note about how their backup program just saved my life, and they wrote back right away with how happy they were to get my note. Strange how seldom we remember to say thanks for something like that. I guess we assume that people know how great their stuff is or someone else is thanking them. But trust me, everyone loves to get a note like that. If you've been procrastinating on doing backups because it seems hard, you know, you've tried other methods and the interface was so confusing, well, you know what? Go check out SuperDuper, because I was right where you are now. I just couldn't do a backup. I kept trying all these different ways. I probably went the first, well, gosh, how long has it been? 10 or 15 years without doing backups until I found SuperDuper, because it's so easy, I actually do it. It's only $27.95 US, and it'll do full bootable disk backups. Just backup your user directory if you'd prefer. It can do time backups, has all kinds of options in the interface, and it's so easy even I was able to figure it out. Do it today! Well, let's see. I use Transmit from panic.com/transmit for my FTP client. It's $30, but the interface is a joy to use. The use of the sidebar folders makes my workflow so easy. You know, I've tried freeware options, and it wasn't until I got hooked on Transmit that I knew I could reliably do all of my FTPing without worry. All right, enough of the mainstream applications that you all know and probably use anyway. What about the odd ones that I simply had to load back on my system in the first 2 weeks? Well, how about FreeRuler from pascal.com/software/FreeRuler? This little program pops up a ruler on your screen with easily changeable units from inches to centimeters, even to pixels. I use it for measuring graphics to see if they'll look right in my show notes. It works just great, and it's free. I also just got hooked recently on Grand Perspective from grandperspective.sourceforge.net. Should warn you, there's no E at the end of Grand Perspective in the URL for some reason. Anyway, Grand Perspective gives you a great graphical representation of where all your disk space has disappeared to. I did a full review of this one just recently, and I have a couple of great applications like this for Windows that I've been reviewing as well. I heard you review Integrity just recently from peacockmedia.co.uk/integrity, which is the simple utility for checking your web links to see if you've botched one of them up. Well, since I'm famous on my show for botching things up, my listeners really enjoy catching me on these things, this one's a mandatory part of my toolbox. Okay, here's a really odd one. Back in the 1970s, when I was in college, before most of you were born, I bought an HP 11C calculator, and believe it or not, it is the calculator I continue to use to this day. I was delighted when I found online the exact same calculator for the Mac. I found it at homepage.mac.com/MBA/, ooh, my high school French is going to come out here, /nonpareil, N-O-N-P-A-R-E-I-L. These guys have a whole host of other HP calculator emulators on the site as well. I have no idea what nonpareil means, but that's what these calculators are all called. If you're a reverse Polish notation calculated junkie like me and like to live in the past, go check out this site. It's perfect for you. Well, I turned Tim onto a program called Pando a while ago from pando.com. This is a free program for Mac and Windows. Might even have a Linux client, I'm not positive. Anyway, they let you transfer huge files to people in an interface that looks and acts as simple as email. The only downside to Pando is that when you send a Pando to someone, the other person has to have the software downloaded as well. But so far, All but one of the people I tried this with just clicked the button, downloaded it quickly and easily, and were able to receive my large package. I send all of my audio clips to Tim that way, and it works great. Pando uses BitTorrent technology, so it works best if you're trying to send the same file to a whole bunch of people. They've also started to add some really interesting new functionality, like you can download podcasts right in Pando using BitTorrent. I spoke to Robert, the CEO of Pando, when I met up with him at the All Things Digital conference a few weeks ago, and I gave him a hard time for the fact that the NoSilicast is not at the top of that list yet. We'll see if he includes it soon. He did confess that they have a picture of me up in their office. You see, I did a nice review of Pando a while back, so they sent me a Pando shirt and asked for a picture of me wearing it. So I sent it back. I took a picture with my whole podcasting rig on, and I was wearing the shirt, and so I thought it was kind of funny that they actually did put it up in their office, so he recognized me when I hunted him down at the show. Well, I've been on the hunt for an application for the Mac that gives us what Windows has built in, and that's the ability to easily view a folder of photos from our disk without opening some big, heavy application. You know, in Windows, you just open a folder and you can just see the photos, you can just view them right away. Well, I settled on a little application called Xee. It's spelled X-E-E, and the link is really long, but it'll be in the show notes. And I picked it partly because it does exactly what I want, which is bring up photos in a kind of a slideshow mode for me, and partly because the developer deliberately named it so that no one would be able to figure out how to pronounce it. You gotta love that in a developer, right? Well, as I mentioned last time, I only keep two applications in my dock, which I know disturbs Tim because he's a big old dock hound. Not as much as he's a menu bar app hound, but he sure loves his dock. But it turns out with Quicksilver, I just find the dock really inefficient. I told you last time about app delete, which works by dragging files onto the icon, hence the need for the dock location. The other application that works well with files dragged on top of it is iView Media Pro, from iview-multimedia.com. iView Media is really aimed at the professional photographer, and the darn thing costs like $150 now, and it's been purchased by Microsoft of all people, and I think it maybe even has a different name, but I bought it when it was around $70, and I never did do any of the upgrades. Works great in my dock because I can drag a pile of new pictures onto the icon, it pops open and creates thumbnails of each one. And then I can flip through and rename the files very rapidly, delete the losers, and keep things viewable very easily. On a plane flight one time, I started actually going through the user manual in this application, and it does a ton more than I use it for. So it's probably worth the money if you actually use all the features that I don't use. But you know what? For me, it does what I need it to. If you're the high-end photo type, you should really check it out. But for the rest of us, apps like Xee probably do most of what we need, and of course it's got that annoying name going for it too. Well, that about winds up the most important software I found I can't live without. Surprised me how many applications I actually use virtually daily. I hope you learned something, maybe an application you hadn't heard of before, or one you'd forgotten about and always meant to load up on your system. Thanks again, Tim, for the opportunity to be on the Mac ReviewCast, and we'll talk to you again next week. Well, I hope you enjoyed that two-part episode there. Have you ever wanted to create tutorials on Windows or Linux, screencasts to show people how to do things, sort of like what I was talking about earlier with Snapseed Pro? Well, these things are all the rage these days. People are starving for tutorials, and it's a great way to learn. I stumbled across a free application for Windows and Linux to do just that. It's called Wink, from debugmode.com/wink. This isn't just free for personal use, it's free for business use as well. You aren't allowed to distribute it without permission of the author, though. Wink doesn't just capture the screen, it will also record your voice as you create the tutorial. The website says that Wink will create the output in Flash, standalone EXE, PostScript, or HTML. I'm not sure how it works in PDF, they talked about that. I don't understand how that's a video format. Wink also supports 10 different languages. I thought about testing out Wink on Windows, but what kind of challenge would that be? I'd recently loaded Ubuntu, as I mentioned earlier, and it was created specifically for Parallels users, so this sounded like a fun experiment. Since I think we've established I'm pretty clueless on Linux, even more clueless than I am on Windows. Well, anyway, I downloaded and extracted the tar file of Wink, which is always a mysterious process to me. You know, on the Mac, if you download a file like that, it extracts automatically using Stuffit, and then it creates a nice little disk image. They give you a big, pretty icon of the application with a huge arrow showing you to drag it to the applications folders. But on Windows and Linux, there's this silly extract step, which I could deal with, but whenever I've extracted it, it just seems to be expecting more out of me, like, extract with feeling this time. I don't know, I push a bunch of buttons, and it extracted all over the desktop, so I went out, swept them all up, and plopped them back into a folder I created, and now I was ready. So here's the crazy part. I looked in this new folder I'd made, and here's this pretty icon that says Wink. On a lark, knowing that I'd have to do some gene splicing first, but feeling ever the optimist, I just double-clicked on Wink. And guess what? It opened, like a rational program. This has never happened before for me on Linux. Trust me on this. I did have to break down and read the first couple of paragraphs of the Wink documentation, because this tool works in a brilliant way, but in a way I've never thought of before. Don't get too excited. This whole story ends gruesomely in the end, but I was really optimistic at this part of the story. Well, let's get back to the problem to be solved again to explain why I'm saying it works so well. Well, we're trying to create a screencast, which is a video that shows someone how to do things on a computer screen. Like I said, I've used SnapC Pro to use this before, and it basically captures everything I do on screen and my voice input as well. It's a lot of pressure because if you mess up, you have to either start over or spend time editing the video and recompressing, which degrades the quality. In contrast, what Wink does, instead of capturing video, it captures slides, screen snapshots based on what you're doing at the time. You choose when the snapshots are to be taken, so if you goof up and open the wrong file, just simply don't take a snapshot of that screen. They also have what they call an input-driven mode, which means that whenever you click on a menu, it takes a screenshot, which is definitely what I'd want to do. I'm not sure how that works with the audio, but we're going to give it a shot ourselves, right? Well, Wink starts with a pretty blank screen. It's kind of hard to tell what to do next other than make a new file. The next thing it shows is the new project wizard, and I put a picture of this in the show notes so you can see what I'm seeing. It seems pretty intuitive. You can change the capture from full screen to a specific window, which is what I like. And it's obvious that if you click on the Choose button, and if you move your cursor around, you can choose different windows to set up what you're going to capture. So far, so good. This is the point when I got stuck. I clicked the Start by Capturing Screen Snapshot button, and then I clicked OK. To which it replied, "Unable to register hotkey. Please use the tray icon contest menu to capture frames." Well, I thought maybe since this documentation said to hit pause to create the frames, that might be the problem because I have no stinking pause button on my Macintosh keyboard. Maybe it's a key mapping issue or something. I tried assigning different keys to be the trigger, but it kept giving me that same error. So for that night, I went to bed. Then I read some more in the documentation, only to find out that the system key icon thing it wants only works in Linux if the window manager supports the required extension. So, this is a big drag with Linux. There's so many versions, you never know if the one you have has the functionality you need. And the documentation said that the input-driven screenshots don't work in Linux at all. Well, I'm sad to say that I could never get this to work in Ubuntu at all. But the good news is that through reading this documentation nonsense, I figured out that there is a Windows version. So get this, I decided let's go back to debugmode.com. We'll get the Windows version and we're going to start all over again. I couldn't get it to work there either. Well, it turns out that Wink does require you to have that pause key to take a screenshot. Well, I don't have a pause key. So I wasn't going to give up that easily. I reread listener Phil's instructions from last April on how to remap the keyboard. So that's like how I added a delete key to my Mac keyboard, which I don't already have. I was able to do a little thingy where you drag little buttons around and you can map it. But the KeyMap program doesn't have a pause key either. So I can't remap it if it isn't there. Man, I'm sure this tool is cool, and I spent so much time getting it to work. It was so depressing to have to give up. Maybe Phil knows another workaround? What do you say, Phil? Send something in. There's got to be a way to make this thing work. Well, let's have a word from our sponsor. One of the things I struggle with as a podcaster is what kind of advertising I should accept. On the one hand, making my fortune doing something I love sounds like fun, but the idea of advertising something I don't believe in feels so dirty. Well, that's why I'm delighted to advertise for HDA Bob. He's been my mechanic for 29 years. He knew me and my cars before my kids were even born. I know it's kind of weird that I'm so close with my mechanic, but when you've trusted him to keep you and your children safe while you're driving for over half of your life, it's hard not to grow fond of him. Plus, he tells the most awful jokes. Anyway, if you have a Honda or Acura car and you live in the Los Angeles area, you should really consider giving HDA Bob a call. Heck, if you're in the market for a new car, I'd recommend a Honda just so you could use Honda Bob as your mechanic. He's trustworthy, his prices are fairer, he comes to your house instead of you having to go to him, and he throws in the bad jokes for free. Anyway, check out his website at hdabob.com. Sometimes someone does a better job than you do at something, and you just can't snake their work. You got to give them credit. My friend Ron turned me onto a site that lists the top 10 single-purpose OS X programs. I was shocked to find that I had only reviewed one of these applications so far. Like I said, I'm not going to steal their thunder because they did a great job of putting this together, but it's right up our alley. So go check out the link in the show notes to simplehelp.net.nyud.net to find 10 great little OS X applications. I've already downloaded and started to use FOB, which is a great little alarm application. Looks like it might be just what I've been searching for. This next item is going to be really hard to describe, but I've got to describe it enough to get you to go check it out. You may have heard of live.labs.com. It's an area where Microsoft puts its really interesting research work. It's so unlike their normal products, there's some really interesting stuff out there. I've even downloaded a few applications from there that were fascinating. Now on that website, they have a video of Microsoft Live Labs architect, ooh, this can be a tough pronunciation for me, Blaise Aguera y Arca, when he did a demo at the Technology Entertainment Design Conference, TED, and the demo he did was of Sea Dragon and Photosynth. These two technologies will change the way you think about photographs and screen resolution and compute speeds and huge, massive amounts of photographs. It's like I said, it's really hard to explain, so I really want you to go to the link in the show notes to labs.live.com and just watch this thing and be amazed. I know I sound like a Microsoft fanboy or fangirl, but you know that's not what it is. This thing must be cool if I like it. On show number 98, I reviewed a tool called Winderstat, which is a great program for Windows that allows you to graphically see where all your free disk space is scampered off to. Listener Phil sent in a link to a tool called Sequoia View, which he says is similar to Winderstat's. He included this quote, "Sequoia View was developed based on research done by the visualization section of the Faculty of Mathematics and Computer Science at the Technische Universiteit Eindhoven." I think he put that quote in just to see how badly I could botch the pronunciation. Anyway, Sequoia View is available from win.tue.nl/sequoiaview. Sequoia View was an easy install on Windows, and it immediately popped up having scanned its own directory. I was able to use standard Windows navigation to move up and down in the directory structure to look at folders of files. Sequoia View has more features than Winderstat. It has filters you can play with to alter your view. For example, you may recall that when I was using Winderstat, I discovered two huge files, which are actually an effect of running Windows under Parallels. These files kind of swamp the data, being able to look at the picture of where all my data was, so I was able to filter to exclude them, which gave me a clearer picture of my file sizes. I did the filter by file name, but you can also filter on file sizes, dates, or even load external filter files. You can create these filter files and put them to disk so you can retrieve them later. The one thing I couldn't find in my short experimentation was how to get it to reveal the file itself in Explorer so that I could go whack it. It showed me the path, but it didn't ask to take me there, which was a nice feature of Grand Perspective on the Mac. So now you have it, two good alternatives for Windows to manage your disk space. Thanks for the great tip, Phil. I sure am glad you've listened for these past 2 years. You've been a great big help to me. Well, I'm going to talk about some future plans here for the No Silicast. Listener Ben has some big plans for the show. He's created a new site called live.podfeet.com where we'll be able to do a live video show with audio and chat. I'll be able to have guests on the show and you'll be able to hear them. Now, don't get scared. This isn't going to supplant the normal No Silicast. This will be an extra bonus show every month or two when we get inspired and our energy up. Ben did a ton of work on this over the weekend, and it's been really marvelous to see what he's accomplished. On the left side of the window, when you go to live.podfeet.com, there's an IRC chat window where you can chat with each other, and if I'm paying attention properly, I could actually answer what you write as I'm talking to the guest. That's kind of in theory, though. What are the chances I can talk, read, answer, and not mess this whole thing up? On the right side, you see two other things. You have an audio feed area and the video feed, which would be coming from Stickum. The reason we're separating the audio and video is because it's the only way I can have guests on the show and have you hear both of our voices. The one drag is that the audio lags the video by like 13 seconds when it comes from me, goes all the way to Ireland, and comes back. We're going to have to work on that and see how that's going to work. The problem with just Stickum does have audio, but that audio gets choppy while the video looks great. So this is another thing we're trying to do to give you clean audio. We'll see how this all turns out. Check out the site from time to time. I don't know when I'll be in there, but we played a bunch this weekend. If nothing else, Ben and I are having a great time with it all weekend. Me mostly doing the tough job of admiring his rapid development process. We started playing on Friday afternoon, and by Sunday, he had this whole thing mostly working. He's amazing. Well, that's going to close out our 100th show together. I've had a great time. I hope you have. Remember to keep your emails coming to allison@podfeet.com or send audio feedback to nosilicast@gmail.com. Remember to check out the links in the show notes at podfeet.com. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.